Michael, I should point out that you have no connection with the Matt Rush case, and you can't speak to the specifics there, but you've taught this topic for years, and this case has brought up the issue of excessive use of force. So I wanted to ask you, what is considered reasonable use of force under Illinois law?
Well, I think it's important to understand that, you know, we have the laws, we have the Constitution, we have, you know, the Fourth Amendment, and all of these things that determine what would, you know, be excessive or not, but truly what determines what police officers can and can't do are the interpretations of those laws. So when we look at two very important court cases, one being Graham v. Connor in 1989 and Tennessee v. Garner in 1985, it is this interpretation by the Supreme Court that determines what is reasonable use of force.
And what is that specific interpretation? What is reasonable?
Okay, so it's based on, I guess we look at it, it's based on when somebody uses force, is this something a reasonable officer would do? Knowing that different officers in the same scenario could use different forms of force, but is this something a reasonable officer would do? And the reason it's reasonable officer instead of reasonable person is based on, you know, training and experience and things like that. So the other things that kind of go along with, you know, what the courts are looking at, what they're determining. So it's based on that officer's perception at that moment, also realizing that things evolve so quickly and officers have to make a split-second decision. Some other things they look at is the severity of the crime, the seriousness of the offense, the degree of the physical threat to the officer or someone else. Other factors may be the offender's size and their ability, the availability of weapons, are there other people involved? And there's just so many things that come into play because it's based on the totality of the circumstances. And I think it's also important to realize that the courts say, well, we can't use 20/20 hindsight. And just a quick example of
that. Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so if let's say, in fact, I did have a call once where someone said they had a weapon. They came into the police station. I have a weapon. I'm going to be at this place. If you've got a cop that's got the guts to come over and get me, I'm, you know, like he's ready to kill me, right? So I go over to this bar where I was supposed to find him, and I have a description of him. And as soon as he stood up, he reached inside his jacket. So I had information that he had a weapon. I had an information that he was going to shoot a cop. And in that particular case, that is a deadly force situation because action is faster than reaction, and I needed to react to that, and deadly force, lethal force was justified in that situation.
What happened?
However, I was close enough to gain control. I did not have to use lethal force, got control of him. But once we got him out of there, we patted him down. He did not have a weapon. This is what we call suicide by cop. Now, 20/20 hindsight would say, no, you can't shoot somebody that doesn't have a weapon, and he didn't. But it was my perception, so it's based on the officer's perception, at that moment. So I was justified to use it, even though I didn't.
I wonder, when you think about that, at the Police Training Institute, how do you teach officers how to handle the law and then the reality of what you're in, especially that situation that you just described for us?
Yeah, it's all scenario-based training. At the University of Illinois Police Training Institute, we take our recruits through more scenarios than probably any other academy around. And they go through scenario after scenario, and they get to practice de-escalation skills. They get to practice shoot-don't-shoot situations, and it's through those repetitions and, you know, facilitating the learning that they actually develop things. Because I can give you all the tenets of Graham v. Connor in a classroom, and you can say, oh, I get it. But then again, you're in your first scenario, and you're not doing things well. But by the time the 12 weeks is over, it's like, ah, they've got it. We teach case law, we teach state law, we teach federal, we teach the Constitution, of course. But you're planting a seed when they're in the classroom, and you're developing the skills and the ability to apply that knowledge through scenario-based training. And that's what's so important, so that when recruit officers go out on the street, they've had practice and they're going to base things on the behavior based on the repetitions that they had while they're at the academy.
Michael, let me ask you one last question about the legal nature of this. What you've just described for us, the outline of what is reasonable versus excessive force, is that line different in criminal cases as opposed to civil cases?
Anytime I use force on somebody, somebody either has to be resisting me or trying to flee unlawfully, and then I can use force. If you're talking about when it goes to court for civil trial.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
There's less of a burden of proof in civil than there is in criminal.
Is that part of any of a conversation of training of civil versus criminal, or you're just saying this is what's reasonable, this is what isn't?
Well, I think if an officer does their job well and they are reasonable, then they're also going to be reasonable in civil court. Does that make sense?
Yep, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for talking to us. That's Michael Schlosser. He directs the Police Training Institute at the University of Illinois.